Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. I'm your host, Kevin Finn, and we have another exciting show for you today. Later in the show, we'll be talking with Renee Godfroy, the motivational keynote speaker and humanitarian with the Godfroy Group, TJ Calloway, co-founder and CEO of Onward Reserve, and Eddie Brumbaugh, owner and interior designer with Jackson Charles Homes. But first up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have Shahar Oren, the president and CEO of Neurotic Media. Welcome to the show. Hopefully I didn't butcher your name.
Good morning.
Bad.
No, you did very well.
So tell me a little bit about Neurotic Media and what you guys are out doing there for folks.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for having me here this morning. Neurotic Media is a business-to-business company. We empower businesses to create custom white-labeled iTunes-like solutions, iTunes in a box, so basically music solutions that are white-labeled for different businesses. And we help different brands promote their products and services with the universal power of music. Everybody loves music.
Definitely.
Everybody loves getting music. So basically what we do is provide an engine. The problem we solve in the marketplace is that unless you're one of the top 10 music download brands in the marketplace,
yeah,
you're not going to invest millions of dollars. And the licensing process with record companies is very, you know, time-consuming,
yeah,
and expensive. We provide an end-to-end turnkey solution that's very economical and fast to market. So basically providing you with music that moves consumers to action, moves
wow,
consumers to try your product. Different brands use us to reward their consumers for action. If it's buying something, trying something, following them on social, signing up to a database, all of those type of consumer activities,
mm-hmm, yeah,
can be rewarded with music, incentivized with music. On top of that, we also work with retailers that just want to sell music,
okay,
and need to outsource that entire functionality to us. So a very comprehensive music download solution. And on the back end, we work with all of the record companies and take care of all of their licensing, hosting of the music, daily and weekly reporting back to the labels and the publishers. So we make the process very seamless for our different customers, the different brands that use us.
Wow, that's amazing. How do you even think this up or wanted to do this? So,
well, I grew up in the cultural melting pot of Israel. And early on, I got exposed to a lot of different cultures. I had neighbors from Morocco that were dancing to Moroccan music. I had Russian neighbors that loved the ballet, and then they had Russian music they danced to. And I was always intrigued with the power of music to motivate people.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what culture you're from and what type of music you listen to, music has a universal power to drive consumer behavior. Drive people's behavior. People identify with specific music, and it's a power that defines them culturally.
Definitely.
And part of who they are. So I've always been intrigued by that. I graduated from Georgia State University with a music production degree in the 90s. I'm also an alumni of 88.5 WRAS,
okay,
the radio station at Georgia State. And through that network, through working within the music industry, I eventually, in the late 90s, got introduced into the dot-com business and,
okay,
the migration of the music business to the dot-com environment. And then in 2001, had this opportunity to launch Neurotic Media. And really what we do at Neurotic Media is we explore that aspect of how can music motivate consumers to action? How does music affect consumer thought about a brand and about a product, about a service? That's what we do day in, day out for, mm-hmm, our different clients.
Well, I think it definitely does. Could you walk me through sort of a customer engagement and the value proposition that you bring to them? I know you have a lot of different examples, but
We do. We have such a robust engine right now to where we have layered multiple business options on top of that. So there's different business solutions, the different brands, different types of market silos use us for. One example is our entry-level offering is a service we call Amplified Brands. A lot of different mom-and-pop businesses engage us for just getting some music cards, plastic cards. We totally customize the card for your business, so you can order 500, 1,000 cards, or 10,000 cards, and you can have however many songs you want to give away with the card.
Mm-hmm.
This is used by everybody from doctor's offices to car dealerships, anybody that wants to reward a consumer or incentivize the consumer for action. And that's a very straightforward entry-level solution. All of those downloads happen on our own Amplify.com branded reward store. Another example would be a complete white-label engagement, and we have a music download store for Kaiser Permanente.
Okay.
Kaiser Permanente has a national campaign. It's been going on for several years now. It's an outreach campaign when they reach out to different prospects and Kaiser Permanente subscribers and engage them to collect data, engage them to sign up at kp.org for information. And if you do that, Kaiser Permanente rewards you with 5 free downloads. Those downloads, you get the code in an email from Kaiser Permanente. Mm. That PIN code was generated by our system. And then you go to the Kaiser Permanente music download store, which is hosted and maintained by on our platform by our team. We curated specific music on that site, specific for what Kaiser Permanente calls their brand voice.
Yeah.
Compilations that relate to lifestyle and health and yoga and things that, that made sense for Kaiser Permanente. So that's been a very successful campaign for several years. Our PIN codes would also be found under the bottle caps of different beers.
Okay.
Soda companies, you buy a 12-pack of something and you get free music from that brand and you go to that brand's download store and you redeem free music. All of those type of experiences are supported by our platform. And in the last 10 years, we've actually empowered 500 million music reward codes in the marketplace on products.
Huge.
It's been a very successful side of our business.
Well, I have to imagine that you guys have so many analytics right now on your different things, and you can really show the ROI to the companies that you're doing. And I'm sure you have a high success rate with people actually turning this in.
Absolutely. Absolutely. A lot of data collection is big here. One of the value propositions that we bring our customers is the fact that through white labeling a solution with us and working with us, they do control the consumer data that's been collected, and they can actually customize what it is that they collect from the consumer in the process of consumers redeeming the music. And of course, they maintain brand ownership because the solution is totally white labeled for them.
Definitely. So what trends are you seeing in the music industry going forward?
Well, there's a few really strong trends that we're seeing right now. One of them is the migration in the marketplace from ownership of music to paying for access subscription.
Yeah.
So we also launched a white label B2B subscription service, which we're offering right now to several mobile carriers. We just signed up another MVNO that's going to launch this summer. So we've got a lot of growth on the mobile side offering bundle solutions where you pay for a data plan and it comes with music as a value add.
Okay.
And you have access to all the music you want. So this migration to paying for access is big. Together with that, you're seeing migration to mobility. And in many cases, brands that think about the solution as mobile first, as we call it. So having to design for the mobile phone and extrapolating from that and also designing for the tablet and then for the desktop. 10 years ago, we were just concerned with how do we accommodate the consumer on the desktop.
Yeah.
Now you have to start with mobile and then get to the desktop. But it's a wonderful opportunity because actually we don't have to wait on the consumer to go home and get on the desktop anymore. We actually, the brand is with the consumer in their pocket all the time. So the interaction is constant, and that opens up a lot of opportunities for brands to push information and harvest a lot of insights about the consumers as well. So those are the biggest trends in music industry right now is mobility and the shift to consumers paying for access. And so we're obviously working to be in the forefront of that. And what we feel is our duty is to offer our customers, our brands, the ability to launch solutions that are very competitive in the way they feel and look with the market leaders out there.
So how do you get in front of these businesses that are using your services and getting the word out about it?
Multiple ways. A lot of it is calling very selectively the folks that we consider target. A lot of it is outreach through a mass email, through social media. Certain social media like LinkedIn has been very successful for us as an outreach avenue. We go to very selective conferences and have established a brand for ourselves within specific silos in the marketplace, like in the retail space, in the marketing space, in the mobility space. We also work very closely with the record companies. The record companies themselves have been our strategic partners and clients since day one. They actually support hundreds of stores for their own in-house need on our platform. So Universal, Sony, Warner, and other smaller labels use us extensively, and they bring a lot of brand partnerships to the table as well. So they act as channel partners for our business also.
Definitely. So why did you decide to move to Atlanta? I mean, all these other high tech companies that are going there in San Francisco, everywhere. Mm-hmm. I know Atlantic's starting to boom a little bit, but why mm-hmm. Atlanta out of all places?
Well, I moved here almost 24 years ago to study at Georgia State University, enrolled in the music production program there, and then got involved at WRAS at a radio mm-hmm. station. And when I graduated in the mid-90s, got to work in a record company for a while. And when I looked at launching Neurotic Media, it seemed like staying here in town was still the right choice because there's, first of all, cost of living. Atlanta is a great hub for technology companies. There's the cost of living here is a lot lower than New York or
definitely.
LA. I travel a lot to New York and LA. Many of our clients and partners are there, so I get to go there a lot, several times every year. I still think that Atlanta has a lot more to offer if you're actually raising a family here. On the resources side, there's multiple universities here with great talent from tech to GSU,
definitely.
UGA, Emory, KSU, SCAD. So we've had a great pool of talent for our company. And when you look at the overall cost structure of a startup, it's a lot more economical to launch it in Atlanta than
definitely.
In New York or LA. So it's proven very successful for our company.
All right. Well, what's your 5-year world domination plan coming up here for you guys?
Well, we're at a real growth phase right now. We're profitable. We're growing. We're looking at growing internationally into new markets. We're already operating in the U.S. and Canada, looking into Latin America and Europe, and continue to fulfill on our promise to basically drive music for different brands everywhere, get music in the hands of consumers everywhere we can. And 5 years from now, we'll just be bigger and more
and
profitable and maybe part of something bigger as well.
Music's not going anywhere, right?
Music is not going anywhere. Music is the industry is changing and the balance of power is changing as far as who's producing the music and who's behind it. But it's really a golden age for the consumer. Consumers have more choices and easier access to music than they've ever had in their lifetime.
All right.
So, it's an exciting time for us.
Definitely. How do our listeners reach out if they want to learn more or get in touch with you?
Definitely visit us at neuroticmedia.com. So N as in Nancy, E-U-R-O-T-I-C, neuroticmedia.com. Shoot over an email to hello@neuroticmedia.com. If you want to reach us or call us at 404-688-6858 for more information.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being on.
Thank you for having me.
How about hanging out with us while we visit with our next guest?
Yeah, I'd love to. Thanks.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have Renee Godfroy, motivational keynote speaker, humanitarian with the Godfroy Group. Welcome to the show.
It's great. It's good to be on your show.
Definitely. Well, tell me a little about yourself and how you got into the speaking industry.
I got into the speaking industry. I was actually a doorman at a hotel in Atlanta called the Waverly in Cobb County.
Okay, yeah, I know Waverly.
So I was parking cars and I was meeting all those speakers and see the type of books they were reading. And so I said, okay, I think I can try this because when I came to this country, I did everything else. I was a dishwasher, a boat carpenter. I washed cars in the streets while I was learning English. Why not try motivational speaking? And, of course, I had the little inner voice in my head telling me that, hey, with your accent, you're from Haiti. And but then I discovered there's a guy in America every day who's giving Americans advice on how to live their lives. I say, hey, if Jerry Springer can do it, I can do it too. So I basically decided that I was going to do it in spite of the difficulties, and I launched my career from being a doorman and hit the national scene.
Well, it sounds like it's going really well for you. So just talk about some of the hardships you went through to get to where you are now.
Well, when you're like a doorman, nobody knows you from anywhere,
exactly.
And then you want to compete with big guys like Les Brown, Zig Ziglar, and they don't know you. A meeting planner is not going to actually trust you to put you on a stage.
Yeah, definitely.
That would be a very difficult thing, especially speakers' bureaus. They're kind of weird. They don't really actually book you or give you the opportunity until you make a name for yourself.
It's like one of those things. It's like, where do you have experience? Well, I'm
exactly.
trying to get experience.
The egg or the chicken first, right? And so that was a challenge for me. But thank God when I was launching, the internet came along, and I went about to study search engine marketing, how to first in SEO. And then, bam, I started working it, and they started finding me all over the country on the internet. But I had to actually have a demo video. I had to write a book and do all the things that you're supposed to do. But the hardship is trying to compete, trying to make a way in a country where I had zero connection, resources, and decided I wanted to do this. It was hard because I started my journey. You might read about it on my website, from a small village in Haiti in extreme poverty and diseases, came to the United States and didn't know anything. I was learning English like a kid, right? The first two words I learned were same thing. And I tell you what, I started using those two words to the max. So I'd go to McDonald's. I couldn't read the menu. What do?
Same thing.
I stand behind the person in front of me ordering. May I take your order? I said, same thing. But I tell you what, a lot of same thing I didn't like, but I didn't have a choice. And so to this day, that's what I learned to do. Same thing. I learned to model success, right? I learned to study others that were ahead of me. And that's the whole thing for me. But the journey has not been easy. But again, if it was easy, everybody would be doing it, right?
Definitely. Well, I have to imagine, too. You don't want to hear from a motivational speaker that's saying, yeah, I grew up with a silver spoon in my mouth. I haven't had any hardships. And now I'm really successful because my parents were rich. Well, that doesn't make a really good motivational speaker.
Sure. Because people don't connect with successes. Exactly. They connect with struggles.
Exactly. And you've come – I mean, all the struggles had to help you sort of mold the kind of motivational speaker that you are today.
Correct. And I had to go through the struggles because had I not been to all the things I've been, being a dishwasher, a janitor at a mall, all the things that I've been through were a stage for me to prepare myself for what I'm doing today.
Definitely. So I have to imagine that all your speaking engagements, how many – I talk to speakers all the time, and they always talk about how at first you have to do a bunch of free engagements. And can you sort of talk about how you transition from that? Because a lot of people are like, yeah, you can come speak here, and it'll look great on your reel. And like, how do you transition from that role into a successful speaker like you are now?
The first thing I did, I joined Toastmasters International.
Okay, yes.
But the first speech, I was a nervous wreck. It was supposed to be an icebreaker. And believe it or not, you're supposed to talk about yourself, your name, where you're from. For that, in that instant, I was so nervous, I even forgot my name.
Oh, man.
And so I started doing a lot of free speaking engagements for the civic clubs, the Rotary International, the Kiwanis International, and the Optimist International. But strategically, every time that I'm speaking, there's a way in the free speech that I let the audience know that I do this for a living. Not directly, but I would deliberately tell a story, the power of stories. And within that story, they will already realize this is what I do. And to this day, I talk to a lot of entrepreneurs about their stories because there's magic in a story.
Definitely.
If you craft the story well.
Well, talk a little bit about those stories that you sort of speak to people with and the power behind it. You don't have to give away any secret sauce.
it really depends on the occasion where you are. For example, when I want to sell my books, right? I did Aflac is a client of mine. Yeah. I did about 36 states for them, kick off the conferences. And so I did one in Atlanta, a huge speaking engagement for all the big dogs, I guess that's what they call them here in America. I don't know. And so within 5 minutes after I left the stage, all my books were gone, my CDs, they were all gone, right? So I use that story to when I'm speaking at another audience, to let the audience know that I have books, that I have CDs, and they will be going really fast. So I craft that story within the presentation and to talk about the Aflac, which is a really long story of how this whole thing happened. But they get the message, right? It's almost because you can't do that to meeting planners and go on stage and try to sell your books and CDs.
No.
A lot of people do it. But I do it what is called the selling without selling. So through a story well crafted and they get the message. And
people like that a lot more, that delivery, more than someone trying to say, hey, you have to buy this.
Correct. And then even within the presentation, we have people sometimes they cross their arms and they look at you and they're not interested. They don't want to participate when you're doing audience interaction. So I would tell a story about a gentleman one time I was speaking in Canada who crossed his arm. And as soon as I tell the story, everybody that they start, you know, kind of like. So that's the thing you do. You use stories to actually do correct any behavior, say anything. If I want to ask for more speaking engagements within the keynote presentation, I'll tell a story about when one guy opened a door for me who was sitting in my audience. So the audience, they get the message. Do you see what I mean?
And they know that's okay. Yeah, they say, okay, well, I can help this guy.
Yeah, because they don't realize it. As long as you are telling a story, they don't really realize you are selling them anything.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Because it is a story after all. And we were programmed at an early age for stories. Once upon a time, right, we were kids. We begged our parents to tell us stories. Then we become adults and we love stories. We're still telling stories. And our kids now are begging us to tell them stories. So life is nothing but storytelling in the making. And we need to craft those stories well.
Well, tell our listeners sort of about the book, what it's called and what it's about.
The book is called Kick Your Excuses Goodbye. And it's talk about the journey for me from extreme poverty and diseases in Haiti to the life that I'm having in the United States. And it's also offer great value to the people listening to it in terms of you don't if somebody gives you their attention to listen to you for any time, they must have a takeaway from it,
yeah.
Something that can improve their lives. One of the things I talk about is the bees and the rattlesnakes, right? When I was a kid in the village, I learned that powerful metaphor about a bee is always looking for something that is sweet, the honey, right? Mm-hmm. And it sucks on the honey and creates the honey, right? The bees, right? But on the other hand, the rattlesnake does the opposite. It's always looking for something that is bitter, and it sucks on the bitterness and creates a poison. So in our society, we have a lot of bees and we have a lot of rattlesnakes. Unfortunately, we have more rattlesnakes than we have bees, and they are everywhere. They are the people who we come up with a project, an idea, and they would inject the poison in that project and idea. They see why something will not work, but they will never see why it would work if they give it a lot of consideration. So that point resonates really well with my audiences and also in my book. And sometimes I'd ask the audience, any of you know a negative person, a rattlesnake? And they would all raise their hands and I'd say, are you living with one? Some lady would jump on a chair and say, yeah, I'm living with one and I want to kill him because. but that's what people always say. They say you kill the rattlesnake. But on the other hand, it was Mahatma Gandhi who said something like, in a world where it's an eye for an eye, everybody is blind. So if you go around killing the rattlesnakes, that's war. That's not good. So the solution is to pour enough of your honey on a rattlesnake. Rattlesnake cannot resist honey, which is compliments, love, appreciation, and things like that. Eventually, they will have to turn into a bee.
Wow, I love that.
Yeah.
So do you have any speaking engagements coming up that people can go to or see, any of our listeners?
Yeah, sure. I'm going to be in Florida and New York. And if they go to my website, they'll see where there's a link on there where the places that that I'll be. And I'm going to be in Trinidad doing a program, a big program there. And I'm going to go to Haiti. Love to go to Haiti to do speaking engagements there because I get to reach the people who are hopeless. They are living in eternal, and it's dark and eternal, and I was there. And then when I tell them, hey, I was there, I was hopeless, I didn't think in my wildest imagination or dream that I would be doing what I'm doing today. So I'm kind of like the light at the end of the tunnel for those people.
All right. Well, how can our listeners reach out, learn more? What's that website they can go to?
The website is my name, ReneGodofroy.com. And I'm going to spell it because
Definitely.
Most people try to spell my name, Rene, with R-E-N-E-E. And believe it or not, I'm a guy and my name is Rene. They think I'm a female. And Victoria's Secrets, they made a mistake. They found me on a list and they put me on the list as a female because my name is Rene. So no telling what kind of samples I get in the house. But life is good. It's Rene, R-E-N-E, right? R-E-N-E. And then the last name is Godofroy, G-O-D-E-F-R-O-Y.com. Rene, Godofroy.com.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on. And how about you hanging out with us while we visit with our next guest?
Sure.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have TJ Calloway, the co-founder and CEO of Onward Reserve. Welcome to the show, TJ.
Glad to be here.
So you've been sitting there patiently. You laughed at all my bad jokes. You're doing a great job so far. So tell me a little bit about Onward Reserve.
So Onward Reserve is a men's specialty retailer based here in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. We were founded in Athens, Georgia in September a couple of years ago, and we opened our second store here in Atlanta.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Last September, and then we've been opening stores as fast as we can. we're opening in Charlotte, or actually opened 2 weeks ago, and have our grand opening coming up in about 3 weeks.
Wow. So what kind of specialty clothing do you guys really specialize in?
So we carry a wide variety. We're really a lifestyle brand. We carry a wide variety of different brands from really all over the country in lots of different categories. Primarily focused on men's gifts and apparel. We're not a men's store. We try to be more a lifestyle shop. Okay. It's more friendly for ladies to come in and shop and find unique gifts for the men in their lives. So it's really kind of fun. I mean, anything from, you know, a t-shirt or a hat all the way to a, you know, Irish linen sport jacket and a, you know, a cooler or, you know, a bottle opener that's got a unique story or, you know, anything that might fit in the home of one of our customers.
So what made you say, hey, you know what, I've got an idea, I'm going to jump into this retail arena and we're going to sell this stuff, this is going to work? How did you guys come up with that idea?
I don't know. In retrospect, it seems kind of crazy. But we started online first, and that was really our, you know, that was our whole model from the beginning. We wanted to build a really efficient, quick, fun, clean website that would carry all of the specialty brands that we as consumers like to buy. But
Definitely.
There was really no place online to get them all in one place. So that was our mission, was to do that. And we had this idea of having this, you know, lean model where we'd be online only and we'd ship all over the country and all that. And what we found very quickly is that having the opportunity to open a store really gives you the opportunity to engage with those customers and give them that, you know, that experience to be able to come in and actually
try on the stuff,
speak to our, you know, our people, puts a face on it, and our stores are really unique, so it's a fun place to come.
Definitely. Well, how do you guys select the merchandise for your store, and how do you pick the brands that go in there?
It's really, you know, the whole lifestyle that we're trying to cater to is really – we saw a hole in the market for what we were looking for. So it's in a lot of ways just everything I like.
I love that.
But we have a phenomenal creative director, Virginia Johnson, who's actually on the road today looking for stuff. So we go to all kind of markets. We visit, you know, lots of different small manufacturers, et cetera, to just find unique gifts and try to stay on the front edge of all that stuff.
All right, well, let's talk about the experience of your store. You mentioned a little earlier that your stores are unique, and especially with specialty goods, you find that you like to have someone there to sort of guide you through the process. So talk to that a little bit, the experience of walking in your store and what people get out of it.
So we try to make all of our stores unique and all very visually appealing and fun. I mean, there's good music, there's fun people, the visual merchandising is right. I won't call anyone out specifically, but I think a lot of men's stores at this point have just gotten kind of tired and boring.
Yeah.
And they don't really change that much. And we're trying to make sure that we're changing and adapting and keeping the stores fun and always bringing in new stuff. So it gives people a reason to come back and a reason to have fun in our stores and on our website. We've got a blog publication called The Gazette on our website that we put out you know, weekly or biweekly that may have a recipe or it may have a suggestion on what to do if you're in New Orleans this weekend,
okay,
or all cool. that kind of stuff. So we try to keep, you know, really our customers engaged, not just in let me sell you some shirts and pants, but let you know, let's sort of teach you what the owner reserve lifestyle is about, and you know, and just keep everybody engaged.
Like you said, it's lifestyle. You guys have a certain kind of lifestyle that people like you enjoy, and that's what's attracted to your store. Also, the big point I think you brought up was that your store is not intimidating. And a lot of these specialty stores, they have this maybe elitist attitude. They're more intimidating. And it's nice to have a woman doesn't feel like she's intimidated coming in there if she wants to shop and get a gift, which it's really, we all know it's really hard to shop for us guys here. So.
Absolutely. And we for that purpose, we have all of our store managers, we jokingly call them the store moms, because all of our store managers are wonderful mom figures. Yeah. It's kind of, they can relate to anybody. So it's fun because our customers range, you know, anywhere from a 15-year-old kid that's coming in with his mom wanting the new cool T-shirt that all his friends are wearing to, you know, retired Fortune 500 CEOs that are looking for a really nice handmade jacket. So, I mean, it's really, it runs the whole
gamut,
and we want to be a welcoming place for everybody, frankly.
Definitely. So how has it been opening these brick-and-mortar stores? You started out online. What troubles did you run into, and what was different about it?
As with most anything, you find 1,000 different issues that you didn't know existed when you go into yeah. something you didn't know, but it's been fun. It's been worth it. I mean, it's starting any business in any sector, and you know, in any way, is you're going to run into challenges, but it's kind of how you look at those challenges and whether you want to be the bee or the rattlesnake. So we have to have a lot of bees, but it's been fun. We you know, have taken those challenges and moved forward. And a lot of, I mean, probably our most unique, fun, interesting store is our Athens store, because it's the store we opened when we had no resources and we had no nothing. And, you know, our lack of resources made us get creative. And
like Star Wars. It was more charming because.
Exactly. So, it's fun because we had to get creative and we had to get interesting.
Well, you're obviously doing something right. I know you're on Atlanta's 100 fastest growing private companies, so that's a big achievement, right?
Yeah,
there.
Yeah, that was really a treat. That was a pleasant surprise, and we're flattered to be a part of it.
Definitely. So, what's your future plans? Your expansion plans? What would be the overall objective?
We have a new store we are announcing on Monday that I can't tell you about,
okay.
but it will be on our website, honoredreserve.com, and then we've got really active Instagram and Facebook accounts. So we've kind of been toying with people trying to figure out where this next location is. But that's live, and then we launched a catalog last fall, and we're about to put out our fall catalog for this year. So we're going to continue to try to be the cleanest, most efficient, most fun website in our specific marketplace. Yeah. And then we're going to continue to open stores in key markets that'll help to put a face on our, you know, direct-to-consumer business.
Are you guys planning to run all those stores? Are you planning to maybe franchise out? Or
we're going to keep it all within our company.
Okay.
I think it's in order to maintain the right quality and the right experience, I think it's important for us to sort of maintain control over that process.
Definitely. Well, where can our listeners go to find out more? And tell me the exact locations of the Atlanta and the Athens store.
Okay, so if you're in Athens, we're in the middle of, I like to say, we're in the middle of the best block on the best street in the best college town in the country. But we're on Clayton Street, 146 East Clayton, and we're about halfway between the Georgia Theater and College Street where the Arch is. So if you visit Athens for a weekend, you can't really miss us. In Atlanta, we are on Early Street in Buckhead, which is, we're actually in the old Pearson's liquor store building.
Okay,
so
all right.
If you're from Atlanta, you probably know where that is.
The Johnny Rockets. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Or the old Johnny
Well,
Rockets.
And it's now a Yerpie, which, funny enough, is also an Athens-based business. So it's kind of fun. We're all moving over. But so we're in the old Pearson's in Buckhead. And in Charlotte, we're in the Park Road Shopping Center, which is on the corner of Park and Woodlawn. It's a phenomenal space, and we're excited to be there too.
So. Definitely. Well, just one more time, just you guys, you cover the whole gamut. Like, you cover a huge kind of clothing and all range of prices, right, for everybody?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, we got all ages, all price ranges. I'd encourage you to come check out the site. And yeah. What's great about us is we have a really specific lifestyle that we're catering to. And, you know, you're either going to absolutely love it or not.
So, either for you or it's not for you.
So come check it out. And that's what, you know, that's why we've been successful, I think, is that we've really laser focused on who our customer is and everything that they might like.
Definitely. I think that's genius. Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing it with us.
Thanks for having me. It's been
no
great.
No problem. Well, how about hanging out with us, our last guest today?
Absolutely.
All right. Last but definitely not least, we have Eddie Brumbaugh, interior designer with Jackson Charles Homes. Welcome to the show. You've been sitting there patiently.
Thank you.
So you're our headliner. You're our
I guess so.
So welcome to the show. Tell me a little bit about Jackson Charles.
Actually, Jackson Charles started as just an interior design firm, mm-hmm. working out of my home basement, or home office, like most designers do in town. We've expanded to a furniture store,
okay,
lifestyle
really?
Furniture store, which is a big taking on, but we're managing. The store is beautiful, and you know, we're just pushing forward.
Definitely. Well, why Jackson Charles? Where did the name come from?
That's actually my son's name.
Okay, that's
yeah,
awesome.
Yeah. It's his name flipped. His middle name is Jackson. His first name is Charles, but I just flipped it because I didn't want a name company in my name.
Definitely. Well, give me a little background on yourself, how mm-hmm. you got into interior design, and why you wanted to do this.
It's just I'd say it's just a innate ability or mm-hmm. you know, thing that I've done my whole life. I've always been a person that, you know, kind of sat in the space, and I guess I call myself kind of an emotional designer because
okay.
I kind of feel spaces. I don't kind of, the techniques and the things you learn in school, it's kind of not what I've always followed. It's,
you gotta follow what you feel.
Yeah, if I don't feel it, I'm not connected, and it's kind of hard to explain that to customers, but anyway.
the feng shui.
yeah, just, hey, no, I gotta feel your house, hang out with me. But, long story short, went through a long breakup after 10 years and locked myself in a room for Christmas, watched Trading Spaces marathon all day, and I had no idea where I come from. I had no idea that was a profession people got paid for.
You're
true
like,
story.
You get paid for this?
Yeah,
wow.
You get paid for that? I could do that in my sleep. That's fun. So that day I decided I'm going to go to school somewhere in the country and I'm going to get another degree in that, you know, so that was it. Long story.
Definitely. So tell me a little bit about what you guys do and just walk me through that customer engagement.
At the store or design-wise?
Both, but both. First let's go with the store first.
The store. You know, working in the industry in Atlanta over the past 8 years, 10 years, I've found that most stores don't carry a lot of designer stuff, which as a designer, we love, you know, we love the details.
Yeah.
You know, so and we understand that the details make the room, mm-hmm. not necessarily just the big piece furniture thing. So my idea about the store was to bring something to town and to the area. I'm in the West Side Design District where a lot of
I live in Castleberry Hills.
So
not too far away.
Not too far. Right. So a lot of places over there are warehousey, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. and it's just a bunch of furniture in a room. So my idea was, well, I'm going to bring a designer's eye. So one, I want to help designers, you know, get a hold of, because working around, running around, you can never find what you need.
Okay.
So I want to help designers, you know, close out their projects and have more detailed like things that are available to them. And secondly, I want to show people what they should be looking for because they don't have the same eye. Mm-hmm. Or let me give you something different as opposed to just finding furniture everywhere. Let me put it together for you. Let me show you a scene. Let me, you know, allow you to understand why this makes sense and why you need it.
Okay. So you
so
actually,
accessories.
So you guys actually, you actually supply a lot of other interior designers. You're sort of there
absolutely.
For them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's one of my things. As a designer, I know what you need.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So talking about the struggles of sort of opening your own retail store, from going from being an interior designer to really taking that leap and saying, you know what, I'm going to make a store that has everything that I'm going to need to use furniture-wise.
You don't want me to say all that. I don't have enough time. It's been a huge undertaking. And most people that I talked to before I did it, you know, I was like, should I be concerned? Because, you know, a lot of vendors and just reps that I work for or worked through to order furniture and things, they'd be like, why are you doing this?
you know, the rattlesnakes.
Yeah. So maybe so. So I was kind of like, is there something, you know, ignorant bliss? Is there something I should know? You know, why? I mean, you do it because this is what we do, right? This is the next step, or, mm-hmm. you know, one of the next steps.
Someone's got to be the forward thinker.
Yeah, you can't be a designer in your basement. If you're content with that,
yeah.
it's a beautiful thing, and I wonder why I wasn't or what happened. But, you know, just, you know, so it's been a huge undertaking. It's been a lot of learning on my half because I'm not a retailer.
Mm-hmm.
I never, you know, I want to see things look good in a space, and somebody may come in and want to buy that. And I'm like, wait, let me order that for you and take it apart. But as a retailer, you need to sell. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of learning how to mix, and I'm learning a lot. We've been open for about 10 months now. So kind of getting off my designer box and moving over to a retailer more, which I need to be a designer second. But I still take projects that keep me very busy, you know, not as many, but, you know, and the other half of that is I can sell, you know, anything from the floor when I am working at the store.
Yeah. So what sets you apart from, I know there's a lot of other retails that sell furniture and do that kind of stuff. How do you set yourself apart in that market?
Well, I try to say that, you know what, I'm a designer and I have a different eye. So a lot of people will come in and comment about the store and how beautiful it is or how nice it feels. And I'm like, yeah, I kind of come from another angle. So I just want to make sure that you know, I'm here to help you. And if you can't find it here with me, I'm going to point you in the right direction. I mean, my whole natural thing for me, it's like I just want to help.
Yeah.
Basic, bottom line, I want to help you guys get this right. And if I can't help you, I'm going to point you in the right direction. But basically, I guess my whole point from the beginning was, you know, people need accessories. They need lighting.
Definitely.
If I was shopping, I want special lighting. I want something I don't see everywhere. So my store kind of gives you that.
Definitely. I love that aspect of it, that you're like, hey, if I can't do it, I'm going to help. I'm sure you have a huge referral base just from that kind of attitude, where when people think of, I need someone to tell me how to find the right thing, they're going to come to you.
Yeah, because I don't sell everything, and I understand that. But I definitely want you to find it. I know how it feels when I can't find something.
Definitely. So how do you pick out your inventory for that? Because is it just unique stuff, unique brands, or do you just know I want something this color, or how does that work?
I try to pay attention to trends and what's popular and what people are buying. So I try to mix that in with things that I like and try to get them as close together as possible. And that's what I push out and sell. And if it's something that I really like and I really believe in, a lot of times I have to pull myself aside and say, Eddie, this is project specific. This is not retail oriented. You know, this is not something that's going to fly off the shelves. Can you afford to do that? So it's a lot of me of that. But at the same time, I just see things that are beautiful, and I feel like people need that. They need to see that.
So how are you finding this target market, and how are you getting in front of these people?
I have a pretty wide client base to begin with, but as a designer, you don't always have to market yourself. It's referral, and you stay busy enough with three projects.
I can imagine.
Know? Yeah. So switching over into the retail phase, it's not marketing and keeping up with advertising. It's not something – it's another thing that I'm learning. And so to get that out, your question, target market. So I'm kind of flip-flopping with that because I want to provide service and product to – you know, not only someone who thinks that they can afford an interior designer, but also the price point for the average Joe Blow who works a 9-to-5 who, you know, is not going to spend a lot of money on this stuff. I want to make sure that even if I'm selling you a coffee table for $400, it looks like it's $1,500.
That's huge.
Yeah. And on top of that, I have products that are $15,000.
Yeah.
That's for that person. You know, everything, there's something for everybody.
So why would someone hire a interior designer to do stuff? I mean, I know I bet you have. Do you have a lot of pushback from guys that are like, "Why would we spend this kind of money?"
Of course.
But talk about the benefits and what makes it really really great. Because I mean, you're living in your house 80% of your time,
right.
And this is where you live, so
right.
It's important, right?
Right. One of the most important benefits that an interior designer would tell you is that it's going to make you feel better.
Mm-hmm.
You may not think that or know that, but it's going to make you feel better. It's going to make you live better. It's going to make you,
better
you know,
lifestyle.
We're going to come and organize your life, so to speak, you know, and you never know that until you actually get into it. You can't really say that or not, but I actually believe that. Mm-hmm. And Secondly, I get a lot of clients who go out and spend all their money first thinking they could do it, and they realize how overwhelming it is.
Yeah, definitely.
Putting it together. And then they come get me and I have to fix it.
That's always fun. I bet you love that.
Love that. And then you want to keep half the stuff you don't, because you don't want to, you know, spend the money again. So it's a fight. And then it's like, now you've spent the money twice.
Yeah.
So just my motto.
Someone doing their own taxes.
Exactly. Yeah. And then you got all these fines. So it's like, my motto is just, you know what? Do it right the first time. Mm-hmm. You know, save yourself the time, the money, the stress, and hire a professional. If you have a car that's broke down, are you going to fix it yourself or are you going to go get pay the money?
Exactly.
Same thing. So if you can afford it, it's definitely worth the service.
So what's next for you? You're going to be opening up a bunch of different stores? You're going to stay here? You're content where you are and all the business you have? Or?
Mm-hmm. Well, next for me is kind of still carving out a more of a niche mm-hmm. for the design side. So we're working on that, pulling some contract jobs together. Because obviously with that in place, the store is the store. And to me, I like to feel like it's an extended office space and not worry about all the overhead bills that come with it. But, you know, and in order for that to happen and me to really believe that, the contract stuff needs to come through. And so we're working on all of that so we can stay busy on that side and still be able to offer great product and furniture and accessories. And we were voted best in Atlanta for accessories and decor by Jezebel Magazine. So
can't
we love
that. Right,
can't
there.
Beat that at all. So,
best,
you know,
you can't, don't get better than best.
It doesn't. And so it's good to know. And just from the feedback from people who have been coming in and how much they like it, it's good to know that you're on the right track.
Well, what advice would you give to someone that wants to be you in the future? They're listening right now and they're like, hey, I want to do that. I want to make that career switch. I want to do that. What advice would you give them?
Be thorough. There's a lot of interior designers in Atlanta, you know, who are interior designers, a lot of designer-ish people. Be thorough, you know, get a degree, get a certification.
Set yourself apart.
And if you can't afford that, learn your craft, you know, study. Mm-hmm. You can study without going to school. I don't know how far you'll get and how, you know, secure you'll be as far as everybody else who has a license and whatnot, but know your craft, you know, don't just follow HGTV, you know, get into some studying, any kind of courses you can afford to take, and be passionate, you know, don't give up, just don't mm-hmm. quit, because it's easy to.
How important would you say, because you're talking about it, is social media to an interior designer? Is that part of your realm, or?
I've been pushed into doing better and doing more by my peers and other people who are trying to get me further along in that. For me, it's a chore sometimes because I'm not always putting everything on social media.
Yeah.
But I think it's important. Mm-hmm. I get confused with involving too much of my personal life because I'm just open.
Definitely.
Like that. But I think it's important, and I think it's important for people to know who you are and your personality.
Well, definitely. That's who,
you're
hiring you. Your exactly. personality is what's going to drive what it's going to look like.
Exactly.
So. So how do our listeners reach out, learn more, and where's your store location located in Atlanta?
My store location is in the West Side Design District off of Howell Mill at 1465 Chattahoochee, Suite 150. Our web address is jacksoncharles.com, and so you can always stop by the showroom or check out the website, send us an email. I'm pretty easy to reach.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks to all our guests today. This is Kevin Finn for all our guests today and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you next week on Atlanta Business Radio.